we get hung up on the names of these technologies and not so much on like what works and what doesn't work. I mean, really, that's what it has to come down to. It's just like the internet. When the internet came up, who cares about the internet until you start going like, oh, I can go to this place and do this thing. And that's how I know what the internet is. I don't know how the internet works. The quality of the database used to train the AI is what's going to dictate how well it can be used. And so I thought that was interesting of how to differentiate any old company that says they're an AI company from one that actually works.
Ladies and gentlemen, farmers, ranchers, and distinguished guests, thank you for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast, where we discuss the latest ideas, methods, trends, and techniques available to help your farm achieve higher levels of farm profitability. The Farm for Profit podcast is co-hosted by Tanner Winterhoff, the Iowa Bankerman, and David Whitaker, the Iowa Land Guy, where in tandem, they will share their ideas and advice from industry experts. Thank you again for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast. Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long. And now, here's Tanner and David.
And welcome back to another Farm for Profit podcast. This is Tanner Winterhoff.
And this is David Whitaker.
Thank you, listeners. We greatly appreciate everything that you've done for us and growing this network. Thank you for coming back and sticking with us. We hopefully have another extremely entertaining and educational episode for you coming right up.
You bet. And Tanner, make sure, I want to remind everybody, if you have suggestions for future podcasts or just like to chime in, farm4profitllc@gmail.com. Of course, follow us, like, rate, review, share on all social media platforms. We just got, we love the reviews, of course, Tanner. JJLC8, listened to it all the time. Great time laughing, listening, and loved it. We love those reviews. Keep sending them.
I don't know if he was laughing with us or at us, but I don't think it matters. As long as he was laughing, that's what we're going to sit with. But I know we've got another jam-packed schedule here. Not that it's going to go by the minute, but let's jump right into our What's Working in Ag segment, Dave. This is going to be a lot of fun. We've got a friend of ours, someone that I've been following on Twitter for a long time, Bodie Kitchell. Bodie is with Next Level Ag. He is the National Director of Agronomy at Biodyne USA. He's also the owner and regional business director for Next Level Ag. Starting in 2015, Next Level Ag has been testing soil and plant tissues samples, analyzing the results, converting them into valuable information, all while keeping the farmer's perspective at the forefront. So Dave, I don't know if we've come across anything like this in any show that we've done yet.
No, we haven't. But, you know, we're always talking. Our whole point of this, What's Working in Ag, is to have coffee shop talk. And for you, the farmers that are listening, to know, hey, here's something out there that can help you, something to think about. It's just like neighbors saying, well, geez, doing VTL, whatever. They're doing something that's working. That's what we want here. And so Bodie's got some stuff that's working for that he's seen. So Bodie, tell us a little bit about the soil test side of it, and tell us about Next Level Ag. I guess just give us a 30,000-foot view.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, guys, for asking me to be on here today. Next Level Ag is based in Alpena, South Dakota. It was founded by Jason Schley. Jason's an independent agronomist, crop consultant. He built this lab from working with his growers in the South Dakota region, really built the lab because he wasn't getting the information that he felt like that he wanted. The lab was never designed to be open to the public. Just so happened that he happened to be selling cows. I saw his ad on Cattle Exchange, wanted to know why he was selling cows. And here we are today, 4.5 years later, and have developed quite a relationship together.
That's not where I thought that story was going
at all,
buddy.
Not at all.
That's extremely cool. That is the small world that agriculture involves. So the cool part about why I've followed you is I feel like you put a lot of everyday practices of farming into an extremely simplified way for me to understand. As a banker and the son of a farmer married to another family of farmers, that helps me a lot. So what about what you guys are doing makes soil tests a little bit easier to understand?
Yeah, so honestly, I think what makes it a little bit easier is just the way that we dive in and go education-based. Because it's certainly, if you look at it from a high level and you look at our soil test versus, you know, a standard soil test out there, there's nothing about it that is very simple. We're looking at the chemical, the physical, and the biological side, where today most soil tests are just looking at the chemical side of the soil. So I really think it's the education piece of trying to make sure that we relate it back to farmers, because Jason and I both farm, and we understand that knowing whatever we know, if we can't relate it back to the grower, it doesn't matter.
So I'm going to argue, I guess, a little bit that our listeners are getting a little bit smarter or have a higher level of capacity when it comes to agronomy anymore. They're probably pretty well versed in, you know, pH scores and P and K and the chemical side of the world. When you say physical and biological, help me understand, what do you mean by physical?
Yeah, so if you've ever seen the NRCS demos where they have the cover crop soil in a cylinder and then the conventional till, and they put water over the top of it, and they really are trying to show your cover crop soil and how it stays together, the soil structure, right? That's the physical attribute of your soil. And then the biological side is we're measuring the 24-hour CO2 respiration, which is just the amount of carbon dioxide released by biology. So it gives us a score on how active our soils are.
Tanner, that's going to be huge. Bodie, that's going to be huge. I was just at the Land Expo, and carbon credits, new administration, are going to be huge. Listeners, something to start researching. Carbon credits in your soil, it could be the next best thing. Sorry to digress.
No, I think you're onto something, Dave. And I think this already, just after the first couple of seconds here, I have a feeling we're going to be talking to Bodie a lot more than just this what's working in ag segment, because there's a ton of value, I think, in what he's doing. But there could be more, and that's why when I had followed you, you as an agronomist, I feel like you're doing a lot of things in season that others aren't, and I kind of want to learn more about that. What, once the crop's in the ground, what are you doing at Next Level Ag that is beneficial to our listener?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just understanding that, you know, with when Roundup came along, right, Roundup became really prevalent, you know, just crop scouting kind of went to the wayside. What we're trying to do is we're trying to understand how your plants are operating, how efficient they are in taking nutrients. You know, one thing that I say this in every presentation that I give is as an industry, I feel like we focus on building an offensive lineman. We feed a cross country runner and we're pissed off on our quarterback sitting in the hospital. And what I mean by that is that we never check the progress of our crop throughout the growing season, and we don't know how to repeat the success or to stay away from the failures.
So you're crop scouting, and I'm assuming you're doing that with drones, and you're doing that with heat signatures of the crop, correct? Or help me understand more of in season.
Yeah, so when I go in season, I tend to lose weight in the summertime. I go into hibernation mode through the winter, and I do all of my scouting, or a large majority of it, by walking the fields. Yeah, so certainly not against the use of drones, but I'm walking a lot of our fields. I'm going in there, putting my hands in the soil, pulling tissues. We do a lot of in-season soil and tissue sampling. That's my in-season management.
So tissue sampling, explain to me what that is.
Yeah, so what we're trying to do with that is we're going, whether it's corn, soybeans, wheat, whatever it is, we're going in and taking leaf samples off of these plants, representative leaf samples, putting them in a tissue bag and sending that off to the lab to run an analysis showing the nutrient concentration within each of these plants that we're pulling.
And then what is that? Okay, so we've got a tissue sample. We get a result back. What do we do? And part of this is educational for me, because I know that I've got family that we put our nitrogen on at the beginning of the year. We did our spring applied, whether it was a dry, and don't even go back. We don't even have a side dress rig. So this is a new concept to me, and probably a new concept to some of our listeners. Now that you have tissue samples and results back, what does that tell you? What do you get out of that?
Yeah, so really what it's reporting is it's reporting the nutrient concentration of each nutrient. So nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, sulfur, calcium, zinc, manganese, copper, boron, iron, right? And what that is we're just trying to see if our plants are running on max efficiency or whether we have a nutrient deficiency. And if you really think about it, these high yield growers that are in the National Corn Grower Contest, what are they doing? At the end of the day or the end of harvest, they have a higher nutrient concentration within that plant, which is what's driving their yields. And that's really what we're focused on, is how can we efficiently produce bushels, whether you're interested in NCGA type yields or not. how can we be most efficient with the input dollars that we have? And we feel like tracking in season gives us that best chance.
I see this as like a cancer biopsy, if you will. And so if you went to the doctor and all of a sudden they said, hey, we don't know what that is, let's take a look. They're gonna take a look, take a sample, look at it. But then the doctor is gonna instruct you what we need to do. Is it this? Is it that? So I'm guessing that you guys do that as well at Next Level Ag, that you're going to instruct how to fix it. So this is what's working for us, is not just getting the information. Hey, you got cancer. Okay, that sucks. Now what do we do about it? Correct? That's what you're doing?
100% it is.
Nice. So then the other thing that I have seen you tweet about, and I think I also saw it out there on the website, is you also have a digital platform that puts all these results and plans all together. Can you describe what you guys are doing with that?
Yeah, this is one that there's a lot of excitement around, this new technology right now. This is something that Jason has been working on for a long time. And obviously for the last 4.5 years, I've had the benefit of working on. And really the last year and a half, it really came to fruition. It is a dashboard that a grower is going to have the ability to get on real time, whether they're feeding cattle, whether they're sitting in their recliner at night, whatever it is, but they're going to be able to log in and check every one of their fields and look at their soils and their tissues and see the data and the relationships of the nutrients in real time. And they can have a decision made by the time that they're done looking at that.
What is that called? What are you guys calling it?
Yeah, so that's called 365, Next Level Ag 365. And that's the dashboard website. And basically what that is just, having an agronomy partner with you 365 days a year, because we understand that our soils are living and that for 365 days a year, we should be paying attention to that.
So Bodie, this is Corey. I'm actually,
surprise!
I'm actually sitting in on this before, because I'm getting ready for the next show, but this is what excites me. I used to sell some proprietary products. A lot of people like to call them snake oils. We did some tissue samples and stuff like that, but it was no plan. There was no plan to. We go out and take one tissue sample sometime in June, and then try to base some applications off of that. This 365 program seems to be what's bringing everything to fruition and giving me the what, where, why, when, how. And why we're going to do things. And so instead of just everyone can go out and sell a product one time, but I want to know why.
Yeah. And that's what to do with your cancer once you know it.
Yep.
Yep.
So that's what I think is cool about it, but I'll shut up now.
So I tell you what, it's really good to know all this information. And so, listeners, that's what's working in ag, and
I'm intrigued.
Yeah,
this is exciting. And I don't think we don't normally summarize the what's working in ag segment, but in about 15 minutes here, we just unpacked a guy who met another farmer, two farmers that met at a cow sale that are doing something different with the biologicals in the soil, managing it throughout the year. And right now, there's some pretty buzzworthy items on the stock market. I'm going to compare what they've got going on. If you put money into an investment portfolio, you're not just going to ignore it until you take it out a year from now. If you're going to manage that stock portfolio, you're going to want to pay attention to what's going on and make sure that you get all the potential out of this. So, Bodie, if it's all right by you, we may stay in touch, because I think we could get a full-length episode out of this, something to where we focus on understanding the soil better, making sure we maximize the potential of our crop. But then, like you said with your lineman scenario, we got to feed that to get all the way to that max yield. What do you think, Bodie?
I love it. I would be happy to join on. I've had a blast today.
I have so many more questions. I can't wait.
It's like an onion. There's so many layers to peel back here.
Okay, okay, listener, before we sign off with Bodie here, you let us know. Send us an email, farmforprofitllc, or send something on our social media channels. If you want to learn more about the biological side, Next Level Ag, Bodie in general, whatever it is, let us know. I'm pretty sure we're going to put something together, but obviously if you guys really want to hear about it, we'll get it done sooner rather than later. So, Bodie, really, really thank you for joining us today. I know we didn't get to spend a lot of time, but I think we've got some more time in our future planned ahead. So with that, again, thank you for sharing what's working in ag with our listeners.
Thank you. Thank you for your time as well.
All right. We're going to move on to our general topic for today.
The future of ag. So tell me more about this.
Yeah, we're doing a crossover episode. So a couple episodes back, we had the hot rod farmer on. and kind of crossed over different podcast lands. And we're going to do the same thing today with our guest today, Tim Hammerich. So he is the host of the Future of Ag podcast. And that's what we're talking about today, is kind of some of the things that we picked out of some of his shows and guests that he had as to what might affect the profitability of your farm in the future. So first of all, let's introduce Tim Hammerich. Tim is a former National FFA president, graduate of the University of California, Davis, has a degree in crop science and management, also completed the Master's of Ag Business program at Kansas State University. Spent the first 8 years of his career as an ag commodities trader and manager, where he developed a background in trading and management, sales strategy, business development, and risk management, but he now resides out there in Eagle, Idaho. He's the founder of AgGrad and now the senior director of strategic communications for Cogent Consulting. He's also someone that I would consider a mentor and a friend. Happy to welcome to the podcast, Tim Hammerich.
Thank you guys very much. I'm a little bit disappointed I missed the beer episode, but happy to be here and really appreciate you having me on.
Hey, you got a lot of words crammed into one spot. It definitely makes it our pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Thank you guys.
So let's jump right into it. We want to focus on the profitability of agriculture. That's the whole premise of our for-profit episodes. Where do you see the advancement of technology going in helping farmers and that profitability level?
Yeah, that's the big question, right? I mean, there's all this chatter about ag tech, but when it comes down to it, like, what's it really done? And especially as you look back, you know, ag tech kind of got its boost in 2013 on the Climate Corp acquisition. And you look back now, we're going on 8 years of that. And like, okay, well, what's changed, you know, since then? And a lot of growers are saying probably not too much, right? I mean, I kind of doing more of the same, and it's not really affecting my bottom line. So it's a common complaint. It's a question we're constantly asking is, number one, what's out there actually making a difference? And number two, why not? So as I look forward to get more directly to your question there, you know, we have over decades become very, very efficient in operations in agriculture. And so it's not easy to squeeze more efficiency out of that. In other words, more profit out of that. But it is possible. You know, I think I look at technologies that are focused on reducing labor costs, allowing growers to scale to cover more acres with less, reducing inputs, I think is a big one. So as far as broad categories, I would say, you know, those are areas where when I hear of a technology that can really make a dent on the biggest line items on the expense side of a budget that I think, you know, we have coming. And we're going to talk about a few of them here today, I think.
And yeah. I think the one, Tanner and Tim, the one that everybody misses, because every farmer I know, they don't put anything for their time. So yep. I think where the technology actually comes into play is how can we do it faster, not better, cheaper, quicker, or more productivity out of it. But how do we save time? Because time became more important than money. So now we don't have the huge families. We don't have the growing season that we had. That's where I see the technology giving the advantage, but not a lot of people put a pencil to it. So when you think of, did it affect your profitability? Well, it depends. Right. Do you actually put a line item for your time?
No, that's a really good point. I was just listening to another podcast that talked about that. You know, farms used to live off of 160 acres, but they were always still combining a month after we were now. If you compare it then to now, and elevators were open until 10 p.m. So now you've got co-ops that are only open till 6 and we're done a month earlier. So time is definitely, you can see the advancements that we've had so far here.
So Tim, you get to talk with all future ag companies that are out there. What have you noticed that are challenges that new companies are having as they are looking to improve agriculture? I mean, I'm sure there's a host of them. So loaded question there.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a loaded question, but there are quite a few. And if I can just go back and add one more thing to that last point, you know, along the lines of, you know, being able to do things quicker, and it's kind of hard to really evaluate that over time, decision support. So if you're making better decisions this year than you were last year or 5 years ago, it may be a little bit difficult to quantify that, right? Because all the variables might be different. You had different weather this year. Maybe your operation looks different. And so some of the decision support tools that are out there, I think are a little bit harder to say, like, look at this ROI you got just because under these conditions, you made better decisions.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just want to throw that in there because I know Tanner's a master editor and he'll make that sound seamless.
I guess back to that question, what challenges do you see companies that are starting out or looking to improve agriculture? What do they all face?
Yeah, I think they face a couple of headwinds. I mean, number one, there's a little bit of new shiny object fatigue out there on the part of the customer. You know, you don't get the show up on the doorstep and say, I've got something new and shiny, and everyone just jump for joy that you're there to save them, right? I mean, we're long past that if it ever did exist. So you've got a little bit of headwind there and just kind of tech fatigue. I think also there's just some assumptions made about agriculture that simply don't turn out to be true. So, you know, you'll hear people say, especially in the investment community and the ag tech community, ag is the least digitized industry, which, I mean, arguing about that seems like a big waste of time. But what they'll say is, like, if we could just take this technology that other industries have adopted and apply it to ag, you know, it's going to work. And I think that's a big mistake a lot of people make.
So, Tim, one of my goals today was to kind of pick through the library of shows that you've got put together, which, listeners, if you haven't caught on to it already, it's the Future of Ag podcast. Go find Tim's podcast out there, too. But one of the companies that stuck out in our minds when we were listening to what you had going on is a company called Rantizo. At least I think I pronounced it right. Could you maybe explain to our listener what Rantizo does or what they're up to?
Sure. Yeah. Rantizo's right there. They're an Iowa-based company. They do drone spraying. And so it's probably something that either people have heard of or at least thought of in the past is, can we use drones to spray? And they figured out and overcome some of the both regulatory and technical challenges to make that happen. So they offer spot spraying, and there's a couple advantages to do that, but they allow mostly retailers is who they work with. They allow retailers to send a drone or a swarm of drones out to a field to spray them rather than a sprayer.
So that's next. That is the future. I mean, we talked about off mic, unmanned equipment. You know, just that's the future. Unmanned vehicles. I mean, we already know and see where things are going, but to now be able to efficiently take a drone out and maybe spot spray, maybe do the whole field, like you were saying, a swarm. I think we all saw, what was that, the Pepsi commercial at the Super Bowl when they made a big design with a swarm of drones. That's really cool. So what are they saying is an advantage to using a drone sprayer versus the traditional way?
Yeah, there's multiple. I mean, number one, you've got the spot spraying ability where you're just sending a drone out there and not a big sprayer with one big tank. So they have like an automated mix and fill trailer that can actually hold a host of different products. So you could spot spray what you need, where you need it, when you need it. They also say with three drones swarming and that automated mix and fill, they can cover, I believe is it 60 acres an hour, if I'm remembering right? But I mean, it's something that's not far behind other technology that we have here now. And then also, this is what really blew my mind. They're not just, you know, spraying inputs. They're also spraying things like cover crop seed and beneficial insects and even pollen. So they've even messed around with, you know, spraying pollen. So being able to have this type of precision without needing to have a dry field to go into, that's another benefit. They can go right after a rain if need be. It's pretty amazing what they're able to do.
It makes me wonder, being a drone pilot myself and being Part 107 FAA certified, that you can only have a drone so far away, it can only go so high, you can only carry certain loads, you can only operate so many at a time. When you talk three drones or multiple drones, like how are they getting away with this? I'm sure there's going to be some legislation on this, Tanner, sure, that's farther. But you made me think even farther, Tim. You made the comment that you said that where people are struggling to get into agriculture is they're taking something that, hey, another industry is using this. So real estate's using drones. Hey, maybe we could use it for spraying. Or somebody is doing something else and we think that'd be great. I think to my business, and that's selling farms, and I look at the technology from online auctions to even companies like Farmland Finder, that they're saying people will sell their own farm, and we can do digital contracts, and we can use DocuSign and digital deeds and deed prep, and we don't even need a bank anymore. We can use a financier.
Oh, no, we always need a bank.
All digital. We don't need a realtor. We don't need a bank. My question is are people ready for this? So when I think of farming, yeah, we had online auctions 10 years ago, but until COVID pushed it forward and forced everybody to do it, nobody was really accepting of it. They still wanted to come to the live auction. So when I think of sprayers and I think of, farmers know that, yeah, there's probably a sprayer that could go out there on a drone and do this. The real question is, maybe not, can they take that technology and implement it into agriculture? Are people ready for them to take that technology and implement it into agriculture?
What do you think, Tim? Are people ready?
Yeah, I think they are if it's done the right way. And so I think that actually gets to some of the genius behind Rantizo is it's not just a technical innovation, it's a business model innovation. So they're not targeting farmers per se, they're targeting retailers. And they have a, basically they have a revenue share program. They call it a spray as a service. And so you're going to buy the upfront equipment. It's something like $100,000 for the package. I mean, if you compare that with the sprayer, that's pretty reasonably priced.
Right.
And then, you know, they take a third of the revenue. So they encourage their retailers to charge per hour, $150 an hour, and they get $50 an hour for it. So they can show a payback of less than a year for this retailer. And so rather than, and this is another problem that a lot of ec tech companies run into, which is they see the farmer as this monolithic creature where all farmers are the same. They have the same problems. They face the same issues, which you all know, you know, simply not true. They see like, okay, where is the path of least resistance for this technology and how can we focus right there? I think Rantizo's a good example of somebody doing that right.
So I'm sitting here, Corey's in studio. You can't hear him, guys and gals that are listening, but I could see where this would be easily adoptable. You know, if you called a co-op and you wanted them to come spot spray the corner of that 160, they're probably going to drag their feet and put you at the bottom of their list to do a partial tank or to find out when they're going to have leftover from another job. I could see where you call up one of these Rantizo contractors. I'm going to call them a contractor. Someone who's working with Rantizo. And they fly over and take care of a 20-acre trouble spot that maybe was too wet or didn't get sprayed timely or whatever it is. So that's kind of a unique strategy for them to expand into the market. Did they give any type of an allusion to you as to where they want to go in the future?
Oh, you know, we mentioned it just briefly, and this is what I love about doing the show, because we talk about, first of all, I try to focus on innovations that have relevance today. I don't want to talk about something that may be possible, you know, at some point in the future. Yeah. But then there's always this hint of like, oh, well, what if? And in their case, the what if is, what if you could have a station that just stayed there at the on the farmer's property, a station that had a drone there, and it just kind of went out whenever it was needed, wherever it was needed. And I think these things could get to a price point where that makes sense. You just go and you refill whatever it is you're trying to apply, but it's a station that kind of automates the process. And that kind of blew my mind. Now, I don't think we're ready for that, to get back to your question earlier, but I think that's an interesting idea.
You got to start thinking about it sometime.
Right. Well, it's I say it all the time. Money's made in the margins, and if this can save people money in the margin between what they put out and what they yield out of it, that's when it will become fact, and people will start using it.
Well, that's a good point, Dave, and that actually kind of leads me to the next company, Tim, that I wanted to chat with you about, and it is a company that, from my understanding, has potentially created a new cash crop for farmers. Could you tell our listeners about CoverCress?
Yeah, CoverCress has genetically engineered the pennycress plant to create a cash cover crop. And that may sound a little bit like an oxymoron, but
it does.
A cash cover crop that would go between corn and beans, and it is limited on where it can go. I think they're talking south of I-80 and north of I-64, I want to say. I don't know my southeast interstates very well. But anyway, it's kind of in that middle part of the country where you could plant it's an oil seed that you'd plant in after corn, and it would grow through the winter. You could harvest it just as you're getting ready to plant your beans and sell it. And what it is on a couple of levels, the first level is it's what they call low carbon feedstock. And I think we're going to hear more and more and more about this as we talk about carbon. What are low carbon feedstocks that don't have a big environmental impact, a carbon impact, but can produce a fuel, in this case, jet fuel. So you've got farmers basically farming the feedstock for jet fuel in between two crops where maybe they were already planting a cover crop, maybe they weren't, but instead of the cost of a cover crop, it's now a revenue generating part of their business.
Huh. The carbon credit, it is going to be a new thing that's huge.
Yeah, I feel like today we're just discovering new episodes. So we're going to have to talk about the biologicals in the soil with Bodie, and then we're going to have to get someone on here to talk about the carbon market. I think that, Tim, is a very important factor that you just brought. And it's going to grow in interest. I think it's trading like the wild, wild west right now, but there could be a future of that, you know, off topic.
There are companies out there that are trading it, not wild, wild west style, that are now going to the stock exchange, and you are going to be able to buy, sell credits, not like Bitcoin, but carbon credits. And it could be a new cash crop, if you will, for farmers.
Well, back to CoverCress, Tim. You mentioned that it is part of pennycress. So is this a genetically modified crop, or what are they doing to be able to get this new oil seed?
Yeah, a little bit of a nuance there. So it's not a GMO because they're not taking a gene from another species and putting it in, but it is gene edited. So it is you know, using that technology, that modern breeding technology, to get to change the plant a little bit to get it their way. Because pennycress, as is a weed. So they're adopting it to their own needs, both in terms of what they need on the output and also what they need agronomically. But yeah, so it's pretty incredible what they've been able to do. But it's a huge mountain to climb, right? I mean, you've got to develop a market. You've got to obviously develop the technology itself. You got to get customers. And so they're really trying this whole value chain approach that others have tried and struggled with. So it'll be interesting. I hope that they're successful, but it is a whole lot to tackle on so many fronts.
And if I remember from listening right, their target is to be able to harvest this with the equipment a farmer already has.
Right. Yep.
So even though they're creating a brand new market, they're not trying to add a whole bunch of equipment to your fleet to make this go.
Yeah, they're trying to make it a really, not a heavy lift for the farmer. So the equipment you already have, and they're actually buying the seed. They're handling kind of the markets on the other side. So it's not like, well, if you happen to have a crusher close to you that will happen to take this product, go ahead and good luck. Like he used the example of hemp. That's kind of how hemp has come out, right? Like,
that's true.
Hey, we'll make it so you can grow it and then, yeah, figure out the marketing on your own. And some people are like, well, hold on.
That's one of the struggles. I've taken some classes on the hemp market. And in Iowa, we just don't have the infrastructure. We don't have anywhere to sell it, don't have the co-ops to take it and move it. And how do we make that product? And then I think of, you made me think of Tesla. And Tesla's coming out with something crazy that we don't have the infrastructure for the electric cars, however warranted or wanted. They use something that was very applicable. They have a 240 plug. We already use 240 electricity. We already have 240 plugs at Lowe's and Home Depot, and they made it something like that that could have implement into every house. So I do think they're taking the right approach here, that they're trying to use the equipment that you already have, similar to Tesla, who's been very successful, and implement it into a new market.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're being super deliberate about it. I mean, Covercress has been around a while. They used to be called, I think it's Arvigenics is their first name. And so they've developed the technology over several years. And now I think they were planning on starting with like 5,000 acres with farmers, so very small. And they're taking the careful approach, which also gets back to your first question about where do tech companies go wrong? Overpromise and underperform and try to do everything all at once. And so it has been a deliberate approach.
Well, now you got me thinking, Tim. So when you're getting ready to put episodes together for the Future of Ag podcast, what are you looking for when you're finding companies to interview or different leads to chase? How do you go about establishing a lineup of shows?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know that I have a method to the madness so much as, I say the show is about where innovative ideas meet practical realities. And so that's my starting place. I want to think of an innovative idea that has a reason that it could work in the near term. Secondly, I want a guest that's thinking about the why a lot. As you guys know, interviews can end really quickly if they don't have a why. Like, yeah. Just because. It's like, okay, well, that was kind of lame. So people who are thinking about the why pretty deeply, it ends up being an interesting episode, even if on the surface it's not such an interesting topic.
Now, the next one, I felt kind of geeky when I was listening to it. It went way over my head. So I hope that you have a clear way of explaining it to our listener, because otherwise we're all hopeless. But the episode that had FarmWave and Harvest Loss in it, start with I can't remember if it's the CEO or the owner. That guy had a really cool story. Could you share that?
I've never heard of this one. What is FarmWave? And
real quick one-liner, FarmWave is an artificial intelligence company that finds use cases in agriculture for artificial intelligence. But his background, he was in the Marine Corps, honorably discharged for medical reasons, went to work in Verizon, and he went to go start a company setting up data infrastructure for agriculture. In fact, he first got into agriculture because he became like this enthusiast for Google Glass. Remember when that came out, the glasses. Right?
Yeah.
He became like this fanatic about Google Glass, and he ended up finding his way to the John Deere Developers Conference and gave a presentation on Google Glass, and everybody was asking him questions afterwards, and he became like the Google Glass guy. And that kind of got him interested in solving problems in agriculture. As I said, he started with kind of a data infrastructure, but then he started realizing that artificial intelligence, so technology he started using in the military, which basically can collect data from sources that aren't, your ones and zeros and exact data that might be in the computer, but from images, right? And we hear about this with image recognition in agriculture, and started finding out how can we apply this to agriculture. And that led to him building the biggest database of plant diseases on certain crops that exists right now, so that you could use something, could be a device, maybe it could be Google Glass, but you could use a device to see symptoms of a disease and identify that disease. But where that really led, and where I think their business is primarily going, is mounting cameras on a combine to adjust for harvest loss in real time. So that's essentially what they're doing. I didn't realize this was such, you guys might know it, but I didn't realize this was such a big deal. He said that in 2019, the projected amount of dollars in harvest loss just from corn alone was like $1.5 billion, just because the settings weren't always optimized on the combine and harvest loss in the field. So essentially they're mounting like the equivalent of a GoPro on a combine, and iPad of sorts is telling, you know, the person operating the combine how they need to adjust settings.
I think we're going to have this anyway, because you're going to have self-driving vehicles that are going to have cameras on them anyway. And so as we see camera technology get smaller and smaller and smaller, iPhone 12 with three different cameras, and they're fantastic. At that farmland investment seminar, a gentleman from Canada, I wish I could remember his name.
Selk?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was talking about self-driving tractors, combines, autonomous vehicles that would go out, and they're using the cameras for that. And also what you're talking about, Tim, when it comes to locating air spots. And I know Google's working on it. I just had a class, auction marketing management. Google is now targeting you based on the pictures that they have been for a while, but they are watching what pictures you click on, the ones you stop on the longest second. Then we're going to start advertising equipment or whatnot your way. So they're using imagery.
And Tim, that, you know, to cross another podcast, I listened to one of Damian Mason's, and he had this Robert Salk.
Yeah.
I'm probably saying
Salk. Rob Salk.
Rob Salk. Yeah. That's it. Yep. Yeah.
Had Rob Salk on, and it sounds like in his app, he's using some of this technology to where you can take a picture with the app of a disease in a plant, and it'll identify. Isn't that some of the same work that this gentleman was doing with your company?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And he was talking about, you know, kind of artificial intelligence. I think we get hung up on the names of these technologies and not so much on like what works and what doesn't work. I mean, really, that's what it has to come down to. It's just like the internet. When the internet came up, who cares about the internet until you start going like, oh, I can go to this place and do this thing. And that's how I know what the internet is. I don't know how the internet works. Right. But similar on artificial intelligence. And he was talking about how there are these kind of stock databases of images to use to train the artificial intelligence to be able to recognize these visuals. But the quality of the database used to train the AI is what's going to dictate how well it can be used. And so he has made this whole like proprietary library of images that he knows are top notch. And I thought that was interesting of how to differentiate any old company that says they're an AI company from one that actually works.
Yep. And we talked about this earlier that it's not knowing you have cancer. It's knowing how to fix the cancer. Right. So here's the picture. We know we have this weed. We have this deficiency. Yeah. Now the camera recognized it, and then give me a solution on how to fix it.
Exactly.
So Tim, you also get to network with a bunch of farmers in your line of work and everything you put together. How do you think farmers view AI?
You know, I think in general, it's hard to generalize farmers, but in general, they're thinking about it, you know, I'll believe it when I see it, right? Yeah. I mean, you're going to tell me this AI is going to do things for me. I don't think anybody is thinking that the farmer is going to get displaced from the farm, although you might hear some fear mongering along those lines, like AI, once we have AI, we don't need people, right? They'll just do our tasks for us. I don't see that for a variety of reasons, but I do think, you know, the classic example with AI is that, you know, Watson could beat the best chess champion in the world, but the best chess champion in the world plus AI could beat Watson, right? So it's like man plus artificial intelligence is the optimized version. But I think we're going to come to understand AI based on its use cases. So if you were leaving harvest in the field before and your yields are up now because you're not leaving them in the field, hey, AI is pretty cool, right? But if you're just coming around saying, hey, I've got AI that's going to help you, like, show me, right? And that's kind of what I hear more than anything else.
That's a good point. So back to this harvest loss company, that's what stuck out to me is the fact that these combine manufacturers are actually paying attention to what he put out there. You know, right now it's an add-on product afterwards, but it could go the direction of being standard because of how important it is to monitor. I mean, right now, you know, you throw a couple of hula hoops out there in the field, combine over the top of them to find out, you know, how many kernels or how many soybeans are left on a per acre basis based upon square footage. This is a way to do it without having to manually walk behind the combine.
Right. Just yep, and that gets back to the whole thesis of the show, which is right now we can mount these little cameras on easily. We could tell it's working based on manual adjustments, but the long term is this needs to be built in. You know, that's what's coming down the line.
And we're trying to, listeners, share with you some things that might be coming down the pipeline. And I think the whole goal of what Tim does in his episodes and what we are doing here today with this crossover show is to just make you think. Because maybe if you start thinking about it now, it makes the adoption piece a little bit easier when it becomes more, you know, readily accessible or there's a lot more widespread adoption. We've also talked about on some of our previous shows, Dave, about maybe creating your niche. So I know that when we talked about what some of the most successful farmers are doing and we had a How to Grow Your Farm episode, one of those was finding some way to make yourself unique. In one of those episodes, Tim, that I think set up a really good example of that was your show with Pristine Gourmet. Could you tell us what they were up to?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, Pristine Gourmet is up in Ontario. It's a guy named Jason Purcell. He's, I think, a fourth-generation farmer and you know, pretty classic in terms of farming up there, commodity crops. And he wanted to do something different and decided that they wanted to find a way to value add their production. They thought about building a feed mill. They thought about a couple different ideas. He settled on buying a, I think it was like a $2,000 tabletop cold press for oils and made a product that he started chopping around to local restaurants, kind of the higher end restaurants that might want something like this. And they kind of took to it. And over the course of 15 years or so, he's built this really impressive business called Pristine Gourmet, where, you know, number one, they sell to restaurants. Number two, they have a bulk ingredient business. And then number three, they sell online via retail. And it's just an incredible story of thinking outside the box, starting really, really small and really, really slow. And he talks about, like, I thought there were so many times he wished he would have just like found an investor, but he's really glad he didn't, because you know, it was the slow approach. And now he felt, and this happened just as a pandemic start. So he felt like he'd built a really resilient company because he lost all of his restaurant business. But because over time he'd built these other revenue streams, he felt like he was really prepared. But incredible story of kind of like really value adding a commodity situation.
How important to be diversified, Tanner. We talk about that. We did an episode on it, on different jobs that you might have to make income aside the farm. I know we've done episodes on that before. Interesting that you said Canada. I keep hearing Canada when I think innovation, anything agriculture and innovation. I keep hearing all these people coming from the north, and are we missing out in the United States? Are we not as innovative? Maybe they're just more bored. They have more snow, I guess. I don't know what it is, but it seems like a lot of innovation comes out of Canada, so maybe we should look north. But, and listeners, maybe you should listen to Tim's podcast. You get the concept. He gives you the why, and then we'll tell you why it'll be profitable on our way. So if you hear it on both podcasts, you probably think, that's probably the one I should follow.
That's not a bad idea. If you hear it on Tim's podcast and you think it's a good deal, send us an email, then we'll talk about it. Too. We'll just have Tim do all of the research for us, and then we got the gravy cray.
Well, no, I love what you guys are doing. I mean, I think the focus on profitability is going to resonate with everyone. And, you know, sometimes I'll get people come up to me and say, I want to start a podcast, but there's so many ag podcasts. I went, well, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of ag podcasts, but you really, if your niche is ag, your niche is too broad. And so, you know, you all really focusing on what's profiting the grower, it makes it your content automatically timely and relevant and different than any others that are out there. So keep it up.
So I appreciate that, Tim. So to keep, before we wrap up, I want to keep picking your brain about the commonalities between all these advancing companies and technology side of agriculture. What are some of the sacrifices that you see owners, business leaders, you know, those that are trying to go about this the right way, what kind of sacrifices are they making?
Boy, that's a really good question. You know, that's actually something I've thought a lot more about as I've gotten older. You know, when you're young, you seldom think about the trade-offs of things, right? You just like think about wanting everything and doing everything and making it all happen, right? And then as I've gotten older, you think a lot about trade-offs, especially having kids. You know, what am I giving up to get what it is I want? And I don't know, I think that's a really important question to think about. Do I have a general answer among all business owners and entrepreneurs I talk to? Not really, but I do think what I see most is the successful ones give up every other business opportunity but the one they believe in most. And so they are able to focus on, yes, we could serve all farmers, but, you know, we think this crop will grow best between, you know, these two interstates. So we're going to focus on just these row crop farmers that are already planting cover crops that live between these two interstates. Like, that's a really small subsegment of a subsegment of farmers. And so when I think of, like, what are they giving up? It's all those other business opportunities. And that's hard to do when you just want revenue to keep going.
So let me expand on that one more point. Most of the people that I see as entrepreneurs in agriculture are farmers. So they're a Corey Hillebo, and then they decide, hey, I found this sweet hitch pin that I think could be awesome, or I found a new way to do something. And then they take that, and then that eventually becomes their business. Do you see those people dropping the farm and go with the business, or do they always still farm?
Usually they still farm. I have seen it where they become a landlord, or, you know, they hire someone who's very capable of operating it all themselves. But as I think about this, in most cases, they still keep at least one foot in the farm. It seems like mostly because they just want to. They really get a lot of fulfillment.
As an entrepreneur myself, I've done that with multiple businesses, but I always kept the one home business that I thought was good and then still tried to chase. You know, you still have to have your bread and butter. You still got to pay the family, still got to pay the mortgage, still got to do all that. And that's tough to do as an entrepreneur, you know, especially when you're talking to some of these egg companies where you need seed money of millions and millions to make it go. There's a big old risk. And you, like you just said, what's the trade-off? Kids, time. Time is probably the biggest one out of anything. I think
we've seen that a lot locally, that the farm is their passion. It's their roots, mm-hmm. and it usually never goes away, but they dive in and 100% invest themselves into the company, into the idea, into the advancement of agriculture. And that's a highly respectable trait to be able to take the risk,
yeah.
to jump in there and do that. So
back to my best saying, when is the juice worth the squeeze, Tanner?
That's true.
Juice worth the squeeze?
You got a great point. You got a good point. So Tim, what do you see the future of Ag Podcast being?
Yeah, I do think about that quite a bit. So when it started, I started a recruitment company. And that's why I started the podcast. Is like, I need to get a way to get my name out there because I need candidates and I need clients. And so I had the face for radio sort of thing.
And, join a club.
And then, you know, as it started growing, it very clearly grew into an identity of its own that didn't have anything to do with the recruiting business. In fact, I've since sold the recruiting business. But as I think about the future, I've gone back and forth like, okay, is this a media thing? And I've kind of come to the conclusion of not really. I think what it is it's filling a gap of between your, here's what's going to disrupt the entire industry, and here's what's collecting tens of millions of dollars of investment on one end. And then on the other end, you know, here's what kind of farmers are doing. I think that there's a huge gap in there that if I can thread that needle correctly, I think I'm growing a community of people who really care about that thing, about what's coming next, but what's coming like pretty soon, pretty soon next. So, you know, I have visions of launching a website that would be a lot more product focus, of where it's real product feedback categorized by product. So you might think, you know, combining elements of Twitter, elements of Ag Talk, elements of Reddit onto one, but it's all categorized by product. You know, that's something that gets me fired up, but it's something that is probably in like the 2022 plan.
Well, a recommendation is so much better than a sales pitch. I mean, in anything. And it's interesting to hear your story that you started to try to gain customers. That's probably how we started, Tanner. Both was between you as a banker and me as an auctioneer realtor. We just want to build relationships, and it's amazing how it's evolved.
Yeah, the same issue that we run into is we feel that so many of our audience not are uneducated, but just have a desire to learn and didn't have an outlet to consume. So I agree. Not that you're asking, but I think the future of the Farm for Profit podcast is to continue to put out valuable content that can be educational, but also be entertaining all at the same time. So,
and help people make more money. That's the whole point. So Tim, on every one of our podcasts, we ask the same question, and it is, what do you see all successful people? So I'm going to plant this in, and then let Tanner talk for a second, give you a second to think, but what do the most successful people in your industry or in your world, what do they all have in common?
Yeah, so I'll do my best to summarize here. This came and went really fast. This was one of those shows that I think went way faster than I was expecting. But we started off our episode talking to Bodie Kitchell of Next Level Ag. We tried to get an idea of how we understand our soils better how to maybe do some in-season management and then explore a dashboard option on to how we can pay attention and track this down. Then we welcome Tim Hamrich from the Future of Ag podcast here on our crossover episode to start talking about where the future of ag is going, what might be going on. And then we featured a couple of his companies and that he featured on episodes. So we hit high level on Rantizo, which is a drone spraying company that has a unique strategy for expanding their market. We talked about Covercress, which is a new crop, a new oil crop that is out there for us to plant as a cover crop and potentially have another cash revenue.
Okay, yeah, cash revenue cover crop.
We got a little geeky with FarmWave and Harvest Loss. So that way we can put cameras and sensors on things from combines to sprayers to track and help make our farm more efficient.
I can't wait to see that. That's going to be cool.
And then we rolled into how you might go the niche route to expand your farm and expand the profitability of your operation. But all these things we hit so high level just to tease you enough to go find the Future of Ag podcast and listen to the whole episode. Because I think Tim did a great job on spelling all of this. But with that stall, before we challenge Tim, was that enough time for you to come up with an answer to Dave's question?
I did. In fact, it's kind of hard to narrow down into one quality. So maybe if I could just sum up maybe three qualities.
Sure.
You know, I think it's an intersection of three things, which is number one, curiosity. You know, the people who aren't curious, I associate with people who are closed-minded, right? If you're not curious, you're probably kind of closed-minded. And the people that are successful, I think, can really leverage their curiosity in a productive way. Second one would be grit. You know, you're going to run into problems. You're going to run into challenges. It's not always going to be fun. So the people who can power through that. And then the third one I would say is empathy. Someone who can actually see the world through someone else's eyes. It maybe is a little fluffy, but I think the combination of those three things are qualities I strive to try to develop in myself and I see in most successful people that I can think of.
Those are great answers. Tanner, we get a different answer every time. Every time I'm thinking, yeah, that's a great one. That's a great one. And then I think, oh man, that was good too. And you just gave three that I was like, yeah. I'm nodding my head over here thinking, yeah. There are so many reasons people are successful.
We talked about New Year's resolutions and something that I failed to do last year, Tim, was summarize all these characteristics of the most successful farmer. And that's what I'm doing for 2021.
That'll be awesome.
I'm going to try and keep track of all those. But Dave, before we wrap up, could you challenge our listeners as to what they can do with the information they picked up today?
Well, I challenge them to go listen to Tim on the Future of Ag podcast.
You took the easy way out.
That was an easy one. Well, before I go with the challenge, tell us how they can find you. Tell your Twitter handle, your everything. If you're on TikTok, let us know.
Yeah, no, I'm actually only in a couple places. So you can find me on Twitter at Tim Hamrich. It's Hammerich. I'm also very active on LinkedIn and trying to get a dang website built for my podcast. So I need to get on that, but nothing yet. I'll eventually be at futureofagriculture.com.
Perfect. So I'm going to challenge everybody with making sure they are creative, make sure they do challenge the process. And that's what makes us innovative and makes the future of ag. I mean, years ago, we didn't have combines. Years ago, we had horses and think of how much we progressed and don't be scared of it. So not to be scared and to keep thinking of what's next because it's coming. I guarantee it.
I think that's great. And then listeners, as we wrap up here, I want to remind you that this is a profit show format. This is our What's Working in Ag, goes into a general topic. We summarize and challenge. The next episode in your queue is going to be a Farm for Fun show where we focus on somebody in agriculture, have a good time, and enjoy a couple of beverages. So Tim, next time we're going to have you on one of those shows so we can just let our hair down, hang out, and explore a couple of beers. But thank you so much. Like I said early on in the introduction, truly are a mentor to me and to the podcast. I appreciate all the content that you're putting out there for our listeners, and truly are. You're welcome back anytime.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate you guys having me on, and I'll grow out my mullet for next time.
Ah, that is awesome.
There you go.
That is perfect. And then listener too, if you have any ideas or suggestions, farmforprofitllc@gmail.com or any of our social media platforms, we truly value the time that you spent with us today and hope it continues. Until next time, have a good one.
Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long.